Welcome to Madam Money's Financial Educational Call. I am your host, Tara Jackson. I am the author of Financial Fornication and also known as Madam Money. Thank you for calling in, and as always, I look forward to being your connection, resource, and coach to money and credit management. These weekly financial educational calls are to provide you with helpful information as well as instruction that will assist you with strengthening, identifying, and building your financial IQ. These calls focus on strategies for money, investments, taxes, and credit management, including risk management topics such as bankruptcy and insurance. Tonight's topic is the truth about bankruptcy. If you have considered bankruptcy or want to know if bankruptcy is the right thing for you to do in your situation, you will get a great deal out of this call. I am so excited to introduce tonight's guest, bankruptcy attorney Angeline Wright of the Wright Law Alliance, PC. Attorney Wright is one of my expert instructors at my Madam Money Financial Boot Camp in January 21st through the 24th of 2013. And we're going to talk a little bit about that boot camp at the end of this call. But for details or to register, you can go to www.mmfbc2013.eventbrite.com. Again, that's www, M for Madam, M for Money, F for Financial, B for Boot, and C for Camp, 2013.eventbrite.com. Angeline Wright currently serves as a Chapter 7 bankruptcy trustee in several cases pending in the United States Bankruptcy Court for the Northern District of Georgia. And she's practiced in the area of bankruptcy law for over 17 years, and she represents debtors and creditors in Chapters 7, 13, and 11. She also serves as a director of the Southeastern Bankruptcy Law Institute. That's one of the premier bankruptcy education organizations for attorneys in the United States. In addition to her practice, Angeline is a part-time instructor in the J. Mack Robinson College of Business at Georgia State University. I am so excited, and I'd like to welcome attorney Angeline Wright to the call. Good evening, Angeline.
Good evening, Tara. I hope you're doing well, and I thank you so much for inviting me to be on this call. I'm always happy to educate people about the truth about bankruptcy. I think there are a lot of myths out there about bankruptcy that sometimes stop us from using it as the great tool that it is. So tonight I'm going to share some truths about bankruptcy. I'm really excited about that, and I'm even more excited about the Madam Money Financial Boot Camp that's coming up in January. I hope you'll all be able to join me where we'll talk even more in depth about the truths about bankruptcy. So let's get started with a few things that I'm hopeful that you can use right away, either for yourself or for someone you may know who could use this information. And if you do know someone who could use this information, have them join us in January at the Madam Money Financial Boot Camp. So let's start with a first truth about bankruptcy, and that truth is that bankruptcy is ancient and biblical. So we may think of bankruptcy as a modern-day phenomenon, and in fact, bankruptcy is in Article 1 of our Constitution, the United States Constitution. So I consider the framers of the Constitution, the men who wrote that document, to be really smart, and they had a lot of wisdom. And they included bankruptcy because there was a knowledge that we have to give people a means of shedding debt if a capitalist society is going to function and function in a prosperous manner. So it was pretty smart of those framers of the Constitution to put bankruptcy in our Constitution. But it turns out they weren't as smart as I thought they were, because the concept of bankruptcy actually originates in biblical times. And I want to read you a couple of verses, and you can consider for yourself whether this is the structure of our bankruptcy. I'm reading from the King James Bible, from Deuteronomy, the 15th chapter. I'll read verses 1 and 2. So here it is. At the end of every 7 years, thou shalt make a release. And this is the manner of the release. Every creditor that lendeth aught to his neighbor shall release it. He shall not exact it of his neighbor or of his brother, because it is called the Lord's release. So Deuteronomy talks about creditors releasing debts owed to them by others. And that's exactly what bankruptcy is about. We're going to talk about a discharge and the fact that the discharge is what releases you from debt in a bankruptcy. So the first thing I want you to remember, the first truth that you should know, is that bankruptcy is not a new concept, and that bankruptcy, the concept, comes from the Bible. And there's a corollary to this first truth. So the corollary is that it is not sinful and it is not anti-Christian to file bankruptcy. It must not be because it's in the Bible. And in fact, I give presentations at churches very often when a church will have a financial seminar. One of the tools that the church wants to educate people about, its members about, can be bankruptcy. So I hope you can hear that and then have an open mind about whether bankruptcy is a financial tool that might be useful to you. So let's move on to the second truth. And the second truth is something I've been saying throughout my time with you so far, and that is that bankruptcy is an extremely powerful financial tool. So many people may know that bankruptcy can stop certain actions. And the law that allows that to happen is called the automatic stay. When a bankruptcy is filed, the automatic stay stops all collection actions. Well, most, and we'll talk about those that don't stop. But the stay is automatic. There's no notice that's required. The stay goes into effect immediately and automatically upon the filing of a bankruptcy. So what does that mean? That means filing a bankruptcy stops a foreclosure, and it's the automatic stay that does that. Filing the bankruptcy will stop levies, garnishments, lawsuits, any actions to collect from you. So using bankruptcy to stop a foreclosure, for example, is a very powerful tool to be able to save your home or other real estate. I have clients who use bankruptcy to stop a garnishment. They cannot afford for 25% of their after-tax income to be taken by creditors. So a bankruptcy stops that as well. And in addition to stopping those collection actions, the main point, or one of the main points of a bankruptcy, is to do what's called discharging debt. That's the release of debt that we talked about earlier. So what kinds of debt can you discharge with a bankruptcy? You can discharge unsecured debt. That's debt where there's no collateral, so signature loans, credit cards, medical bills, personal loans that someone gives you. That can be discharged. Secured debt can be discharged. So, for example, let's say you have a piece of real estate and it has a mortgage on it. The house is collateral for that mortgage loan. So that loan is secured. That's a secured debt. If you decide in a bankruptcy, I don't want this real estate anymore, and I don't want to have to pay for it anymore, then the discharge will get rid of the debt associated with that property. Okay? There's still a lien on the property, and we'll talk about that and how bankruptcy can be used for that as well. But the secured debt will be discharged by bankruptcy. And then you may have heard that you cannot discharge taxes in bankruptcy. And that's not completely true. Depending on the type of taxes that you're trying to discharge and the age of those taxes as measured from when you file the return, you very well could discharge your tax debt. And it's a nice thing to get rid of the IRS and that huge interest rate that it charges if you can. And only through bankruptcy can you do that without the permission of the IRS. And finally, you may have heard that you cannot discharge student loans. And while that's true generally, there are circumstances where you can discharge student loans. And I've successfully done that for a few of my clients who met those requirements. So between the discharge and the automatic stay, the truth I want you to understand about bankruptcy here is that bankruptcy is very powerful. It is a tool, a financial tool, that can be used to your benefit. And so as I talk about that, remember truth number one, bankruptcy is biblical. So I don't want you to shut down about the potential to use bankruptcy as a tool. So let's move on to truth number three. Truth number three is that bankruptcy doesn't stop all actions. Remember I talked about the automatic stay, and I said it stops collection actions against the person or the corporation that files bankruptcy. But it doesn't stop everything. There are a few things that bankruptcy doesn't stop. So a criminal action, if someone is being prosecuted criminally, they have criminal charges against them, filing a bankruptcy will not stop that. And that's important to know. You don't want to do something that's not going to get the effect that you want. So remember, criminal charges and actions are not stopped by a bankruptcy. Domestic type actions, for example, child support, custody, and contempt actions regarding child support or custody, those kinds of lawsuits are not stopped by a bankruptcy. So if you have those kinds of actions brought against you, it's unlikely that filing a bankruptcy would stop that. So let's move on to, well, before we move on to another truth, I want to make sure that we're all on the same page about the relief that's available in bankruptcy. We've talked about the discharge, but I'd like to get a little bit more specific about some bankruptcy basics. And some of you will already know this, so bear with me, because I think even if you know it, you'll likely learn something here. So most of us know that there are three chapters of bankruptcy that individuals and corporations tend to file: Chapter 7, Chapter 13, and Chapter 11. And Chapter 11 is typically for corporations, for high debt individuals, and high net worth individuals. So I won't spend very much time talking about Chapter 11. I really want to focus on those two chapters that most people can benefit from, and those are Chapters 7 and 13. So what I want you to know first is that there are two goals in bankruptcy, and they're the same for Chapters 7 and 13. And we've talked about one of them. The first goal is to discharge your debt. And what the discharge means specifically is you are released from the obligation to pay that debt. We talk about debt being wiped out, and that's kind of a loose way of saying it. But the debt doesn't really go anywhere. You're just no longer obligated to pay it. No one can try to collect it from you. No one can force you to pay it. Okay? So that's one goal of bankruptcy, discharge your debt and give you a fresh start financially. The second goal is to pay creditors if at all possible. So when a person or a corporation files for bankruptcy, that individual or entity owes money to creditors. And the goal is to get relief from that. But the system of bankruptcy would like to have those creditors be paid, even if not in full, if that's possible. So how does that work? Well, it's different for a Chapter 7 and a Chapter 13. And here's an area where many people falter in filing their own bankruptcy. So in a Chapter 7, the way creditors get paid is that for every case that's filed, a trustee is appointed. And that's one of the things I do. As you heard in my introduction, I am a Chapter 7 trustee. And the trustee's job is to check to see whether the debtor has any assets unprotected that could be liquidated to pay creditors. So the trustee's job is to amass a pile of money if that's possible, and it's from that pile of money that creditors get paid. They may get paid 1 cent on the dollar, 50 cents on the dollar, or even in full, 100 cents on the dollar. But that's the trustee's job. And so what that means is, let's say, for example, you have a house, And unlike most people now, let's say you have $100,000 in equity in that house. And by that, what I mean is if we look at the value of the house and what it would sell for, and we subtract all the liens against the house, including the mortgage, there'd be $100,000 profit left over. So the trustee sees $100,000 in equity in the house that you live in, and you have filed for bankruptcy. That trustee can sell the house without your permission and without your agreement. So filing a Chapter 7 gives the trustee power over your assets to sell those assets and liquidate those assets and use the proceeds to pay creditors. I've had clients say, well, they won't sell my car. I use that to get back and forth to work. If your car has a sufficient amount of equity that the trustee thinks it would be a good thing to sell that car to pay creditors, yes, the trustee can sell your car, your house, without your permission. The dangerous thing about this is that if you file a Chapter 7 and you have assets that you don't want to lose, once you file the case, you don't have a right to dismiss it. The trustee can force you to stay in the case, force you to allow the selling of your property. So, for example, if you wanted to stop a foreclosure and your house had a lot of equity in it, you probably wouldn't file a Chapter 7 to do that. Even though filing this Chapter 7 would stop the foreclosure, you risk losing the house, because the trustee would sell the house to get the equity. So you might file instead a Chapter 13. So let's talk about how the goal of bankruptcy is accomplished in a Chapter 13, that goal of paying creditors if at all possible. In a Chapter 13, the way creditors are paid is that the person that files bankruptcy makes a monthly payment to the trustee. So property is not sold or liquidated. It's just that the person who files bankruptcy is now making a payment every month to the trustee. And so if that person has property with a lot of equity, they can keep the property in a Chapter 13. So let's look at the example I gave before. Someone files a bankruptcy, in this case a Chapter 13, with $100,000 in equity in their home. So the Chapter 13 trustee is not going to sell the house to liquidate the equity and pay creditors. What the Chapter 13 trustee will require is that you pay enough into the case that either you pay the creditors in full or you pay $100,000, whichever is less. So a Chapter 13, you keep the house, but it can be an expensive proposition to pay the Chapter 13 trustee every month the money it takes to pay the equity to the creditors. So it's very important, and I really want to stress this, it's very important that you get competent legal bankruptcy counsel before you decide to file, and certainly at the time you're filing bankruptcy. You want to make sure that you're filing the chapter that's most appropriate for you and the chapter of bankruptcy that's going to have you accomplish what you want to accomplish. When clients come to see me, one of the first things I ask them is, what is your goal in filing this case? What is it that you want to accomplish? Do you want to keep your house? Do you want to keep your car? Do you want to get rid of those things because you think you owe more than they're worth, for example? What goal do you want to accomplish? And so it's important to know that in order to know the best chapter to file for that person. So now that we've talked about some bankruptcy basics with Chapters 7 and 13, and you know the goals of bankruptcy, which is not only to discharge your debt, but also to pay creditors if possible, I want to come to truth number 4. And that truth is that bankruptcy, although a powerful financial tool, can be very dangerous if you don't know what you're doing. So I have lawyers sometimes who tell me I can practice in bankruptcy because it's just a bunch of forms that you fill out and file with the court. And indeed, there are people who file their own bankruptcy case. They fill out the form and they file their case. The problem with that is every question that you're answering on that form has at least two or three legal issues behind it. And if you don't know the legal issues, you can get into some trouble that you might not need. So let me give you an example. There's a concept in bankruptcy called a preference. This concept doesn't really exist anywhere else in the law. And that is, the goal of bankruptcy in paying creditors is to treat creditors equally. So unsecured creditors should get the same percentage in a bankruptcy. A preference happens where the person who filed bankruptcy paid a creditor more than they ordinarily would. So let's say, this happens a lot, believe it or not. Let's say you've been going through a difficult time. Let's use me as an example. Let's say I've been going through a difficult time, and my grandmother has been kind enough to lend me money to help me through my difficult time. And let's say I come into some money. Maybe I win the lottery, though not $500 million, but maybe I win a little money in the lottery, $20,000. And let's say I determine it's not enough. I still can't pay my bills with this $20,000. I need to file bankruptcy. But I really want to tell my grandmother how much I've appreciated her help. And so I pay my grandmother back, and I give her this $20,000. Now, no one would dispute that I owed my grandmother this money and that she was in her rights to accept repayment. And now let's say I file a bankruptcy within a year after I made that payment. So law of preference gives the trustee the power and the duty to actually go to your grandmother, my grandmother, and get that money back. Because my grandmother received preferential treatment over all other creditors. She got paid and the others didn't. Remember, the goal of bankruptcy is to treat creditors equally. So the trustee's job, the trustee's obligation, and the trustee has the power to go get that money from your grandmother, even if he or she has to sue your grandmother, and then distribute that money equally to all of your creditors. So there are questions on the bankruptcy petition that ask about that. Have you paid back any creditors? Have you made any payments to creditors in the last 90 days? Have you made payments to family members in the last year? And no one would think that that's a wrong thing to do, because it's not wrong. It's not wrong to repay someone who you borrowed money from. But there's this quirk of bankruptcy law that now puts my grandmother in a very difficult position. Now my grandmother is being sued for money that she's long since spent because I paid it to her 9 months ago. And she is going to have to come up with that $20,000 to pay the trustee. And the trustee will start collection actions against my grandmother. I have seen that happen. I have actually been the trustee who sued the grandmother. Not a very nice thing to do, was it? I know, trustees can be mean or seemingly mean when really we're just doing our job. Okay. So that's one example of how bankruptcy can be really dangerous. We talked about another example already, filing a Chapter 7 when you have property that has equity. The trustee will force the sale of that property. In fact, the trustee won't even force the person who filed bankruptcy to sell it. The trustee will sell it him or herself. The trustee has the power to do that. He or she will get their own real estate agent, list the property for sale, and sell it. So just as powerful a financial tool as bankruptcy can be, it can also be dangerous for those who really don't know what they're doing. So the last truth I want to share with you is that you need competent legal bankruptcy counsel. If you're considering a bankruptcy, you want to be able to talk out your options with someone who's knowledgeable, who knows what questions to ask, who will listen to everything you say, because actually everything you're saying has an impact on your bankruptcy. Borrowing money from your grandmother, paying her back, maybe a family member died and left property in another state. Maybe you have family in another country and you have property there. All of that impacts your bankruptcy. It's so important to get competent legal assistance that I would recommend, if you're even considering bankruptcy, that maybe the lawyer who drafted your will is not the person to help you in this area. And maybe even the lawyer who put together your company is not the person to help you in this area. Bankruptcy is a very different legal animal, as people say. Nothing is about it is intuitive. The whole preference idea doesn't really make sense, does it? It only makes sense in bankruptcy. It doesn't make sense that you can owe someone money, pay them, and they have to give that money back. Only in bankruptcy does that happen. So I hope you've learned some things tonight that can help you. We will go into much more detail, and I'm very excited about the information that I have to share with you at the Madam Money Financial Boot Camp in January. I hope you will all join us at that time and bring a friend. And Tara, I just wanted to thank you for the opportunity to share this information.
Angela, you are fabulous. Thank you so much for your knowledge and for your willingness to share some helpful information. And she gave you 5 important tips as far as the truth about bankruptcy, and that was very helpful in the first, 30 seconds. Imagine what she's going to go into at the Madam Money Boot Camp. So I want to thank you, Angela, for participating in tonight's call as well as the boot camp. And like she said, she's going to go deeper into these and other valuable tips in her session during the Madam Money Financial Boot Camp. Now, the boot camp is an online classroom setting via webinar. So anyone around the world with internet access and a phone will be able to participate in this class. And the Financial Boot Camp, again, is on January 21st through the 24th, 2013, from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time each evening. And each day during the week, you will have access to 2 financial experts to learn tactical strategies to build a personal financial plan, action plan. And the participants will learn money strategies, which include budget management and investments, credit strategies, which include improving credit scores without credit repair, and home buyer or home ownership tips, tax strategies for your personal and couples, as well as small business owners, as well as risk management strategies, which include bankruptcy and insurance. Now, space is limited, but there are still some seats that are available, and they're going fast. Registration is only $199, but if you register before December 15th, and that's about, 16 days away, if you register before the 15th of December, you will get a $100 discount. So you can register early for only $99. And for that $99, you'll have access to 8 financial experts, learn strategies for 8 important financial categories, as well as promotional discounts from the experts themselves as far as with their services. You can't beat that price. You'll probably get a consultation for $99 for just one of them. But with $99, you can actually get access to 8 financial experts. Now, to register, again, you simply go to www.mmfbc2013.eventbrite, that's eventbrite.com. And if you'd like some more information or would like to connect with me on Facebook, you can reach me at www.facebook.com/ Tara Jackson Enterprises. That's TaraJacksonEnterprises. Or on Twitter, I am, and Instagram, I am at Miss Madam Money, and that's Miss with MS, Madam Money. Now, next week's Madam Money's financial educational call will be about the 7 investment risks. So if you have some money or you know some people that want to invest or you're thinking about investing, and this is the market to do it. You buy low, you sell high. So, but before you get into that, you need to understand the risk or the potential risks that are out there. And that's going to be on Wednesday, December 5th, 2012 at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, so you won't want to miss that. I'd like to thank you again for calling in on Madam Money's Financial Educational Call. I care about you and your financial well-being, so please do as I say, not as I've done, so you won't have to do or go through what I did to fix it. I appreciate your time and look forward to seeing you next week at Madam Money's Financial Educational Call.